It's like this. Cop saves lives, does it gently. His sergeant, lieutenant, and the OPA want him charged. Jason Rantz has exclusive details that smell like Seattle Spirit.
The city is firmly behind solutions, and I think if they see solutions working, they're going to support us in the solutions.
So a veteran officer finally decides to take down a guy who stole an ice axe from REI, running around downtown. Other officers trying to get him to put the ice axe down. They wanted this guy disciplined. It is not going to happen. Jason Rantz has exclusive details. So joining me now in the studio to explain the latest exclusive story, Jason Rantz, our morning show host, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. You got to stop breaking the news because, you know, reporters are losing their job. Well, wait a minute. Maybe that's your design. And welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I want to put people out of work.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Have you sent this to Q13 yet so they can steal it?
Yeah, I'm waiting. I'm assuming they've already stolen it, and I haven't seen their website yet because they stole my report yesterday. No, not even a courtesy of a link back to the original material, but that's what lazy hacks do. In this case, Officer Nick Guzley, who everyone remembers, is the hero cop who was essentially able to bear hug the person who stole an ice axe from the REI in Seattle. The case actually happened last year, but it's been reviewed. He was accused of failure to de-escalate despite, for blocks, officers trying to get this guy to drop the ice axe he had stolen. He's getting a little bit closer to the more densely populated part of South Lake Union where all of the Amazon workers are. So this officer, Nick Guzley, decides to, when he could, the guy's arm was at his side, so the ice axe wasn't being lifted in any way. He rushed behind him, put him in a bear hug, and the officers were able to subdue him and take away the weapon. No one was hurt, including, by the way, the guy with the ice axe. His sergeant, Nick Guzley's sergeant, and lieutenant go over the body cam footage. They believe that it was a violation of the de-escalation policy. They send it to the Office of Professional Accountability, who agree. They say, yeah, you failed to de-escalate the situation according to policy. Now, at the time of that, my sources told me Interim Chief Carmen Best and management, the chain of command, were standing with Nick Guzley, where they thought that this could be an educatable moment in certain circumstances because he maybe went in at the wrong time, but they didn't think he should be disciplined. I found out, according to the letter that Chief Best sent to the council, he is being cleared of any wrongdoing. And yet people in the department, as we talked about last week, the frustration remains in that the OPA being used to investigate absolutely everything is causing a lot of these officers to leave.
Yeah, and I heard you this morning in your program, I was on the way in listening, say that there's someone really close to the officer in question here, the officer who acted heroically to take away this ice axe, had said if this hadn't made the media, this person thinks the officer would have been disciplined.
Said 100% they believe that Officer Guzley would have faced some sort of discipline, including, by the way, suspension without pay, if not worse. Now, I don't know if anything, I don't think they would have been fired over something like this. But, you know, the source did say a lot of officers are having these concerns and they're crediting the work that you're doing, that I'm doing, that we're all doing in the media to just bring attention to this.
And, you know, I don't want to be lost in here that for how long has this been in question, Jason?
The incident happened in August of last year.
Wow.
We found out about the investigation 7-ish weeks ago, and it took about 5 weeks for this whole process to take place and go through what they call the Laudermill hearings, which allows the officer to present their sides of things. And, you know, to be fair, that aspect of the hearings, it could go a few days, it could go many months. It depends on the severity of the issue. They do think that, at least the sources I've spoken to, when it's this political, because the media has taken it, it takes a little bit longer.
Well, and this, I just don't want this to be lost. This officer's had to live under this emotional cloud and this psychological cloud for a year, wondering what's going to happen to his career. And what is most disturbing to me on this is his two direct supervisors. Do we get to know their names?
I don't have their names. It's not indicated in the actual report. I'm sure I can find it.
Yeah, we should get their names. I'd like to get their names. I'd like to know, are they PR cops or the actual cops? I'd like to know.
These are actual cops, right? I mean, so they're not, they don't work for like the public information office or anything. These are our active sergeants and their lieutenants.
Well, someone's acting politically because there's, watching that video, I'm trying to think through the officers' minds that they tried multiple times to de-escalate. Dude, it's okay. Please just give us the axe. Following them for blocks. Hey, come on, man. Just give us the axe.
And they were calm. They're literally as calm as Todd is making it sound.
Right. No, so, dude, it's okay. Just give us the axe, right? They were being friendly. They were asking politely, like you say, please, at a dinner table. Now, when the officer, forgetting his last name, sorry, Oxley.
Guzley.
When Officer Guzley took him down, he was in a confined space. Mm-hmm. There was a narrow walkway, and they were nearing a turn. They were nearing a corner where John Q. Citizen could turn that corner. This guy who's acting irrationally could be startled, turn around into a startled John Q. Citizen, and whack him with an ice axe. That was the perfect time to take the guy down, and you couldn't do it more gently. He picked him up, and he set him down. I firmly guarantee you, you can do that with a lot more vigor and with a lot more intent to shock and awe than the officer did.
Well, and this is an officer who's got a lot of training. Not only is he a veteran officer, he's done some work at the Atlanta Police Department. He's actually, I found out, he was on 6 episodes of Cops, so he's got a little bit of a following in that. But he's also a Marine reservist. That's his background. He knows what he's doing. He had the tactical advantage, and that's what Interim Chief Bess pointed out in this letter that we have. It's exclusive right now until Q13 steals it at KTDH.com. Okay. You can actually read what it is that she wrote, and she says, tactical advantage was on his side. There's no reason to believe that if they continue down this path of de-escalation that the suspect would all of a sudden decide, oh, okay, I'll put
him
down my
walking.
He would literally still be out there right now a year later waving the axe around.
Right, walking around. And I know, since I know you, that if people text what word?
Rants, R-A-N-T-Z.
If you text RANTS to 800-465-8770, which is brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution, you yourself can see this letter and as well as Jason's write-up on it. Thanks for joining us, Jason. Appreciate having you on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great work. We also broke the story today, and if you're just tuning in, I-1639, our good friend Glenn Morgan, he acted today as a process server, went down and has served Kim Wyman in her role as Secretary of State because she is going to have to try to defend this initiative. She may choose not to. She may choose to just say, you know what, the letter of the law is very clear. The initiative doesn't actually contain the words of the initiative. Think of that. The gun-grabbing law or initiative that is not a single topic, as is prescribed by the Washington State Constitution, which has cost Tim Ivan, I don't know how many initiatives. This initiative is 18 topics. That's one problem with it. The other problem with it is in the initiative itself, they didn't put the actual language of the initiative on what people signed. That's blatantly against the law. Glenn Morgan served her, Kim Wyman, the Secretary of State. He served Sideshow Bob's offices, the part-time attorney general, full-time seeker of gubernatorial campaign donations. And he sued the office of, I think it's Christian Slaterman, the left-wing activist-money machine, a guy who goes out and gets petitions signed for left-wing causes. That initiative is now in major trouble, okay? Because here's the deal. They have to turn in the signatures by Friday. If they turn it in, it'll qualify for the ballot. They've got enough signatures, and these paid signature gatherers know what they're doing. But they have to then pay a $2 per signature bonus to the signature gatherers, knowing that in all likelihood, the initiative is toast because they did not print the letter of the initiative, the text of the initiative. In other words, they had people sign a contract, but they didn't have the real language of the contract in there. The law prohibits that. So we broke that story as well today on the Todd Herman Show. What a busy day. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show and a little trip now further down the West Coast. True or false? In the state of California, there is a statute or there's a law that states the government cannot force you to follow an impossible law. For instance, the government can't say it's illegal for you to not breathe. Or no, pardon me, it's illegal for you to breathe. Well, that would be impossible for you to follow because you would die. Or it is illegal for you to not float through the air. Well, we can't float. True or false? A judge down there has allowed an illegal law affecting guns to stay in place. An impossible law. Yep. All around the Puget Sound right now, guys my age doing what I'm doing with my head. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. We're thinking about turning this into a feature as we expand our coverage of leftist madness from Seattle Spirit to the entire left coast. We'd need the big voice.
It goes beyond free heroin and encouraged methamphetamine use. It includes the spread of once-eradicated diseases in homeless camps and jungles. It includes being forced to follow laws that are literally impossible to enforce. The Todd Herman Show presents a trip to the left coast.
Have like a something like that on it. A little bit of an echo. Need some reverb. And then we'd pod the music down like this here. And then your host would come on. And I'd do this. I'd tell you this story about what is going on in the state of California. This is just remarkable. Now, there's sort of a reason for this, but not for what's going on up here on our left coast piece here. The state of California has a requirement in California's civil code. It contains a section that reads, very simply, the law never requires impossibilities. Okay. That seems fair enough. Okay, we can't force you to float in the air, since you can't float in the air. But one decade ago, 10 years ago, the state of California demanded that gun manufacturers implement micro-stamping technology that would imprint identifying information on bullets as they were shot from semi-automatic weapons. Gun manufacturers say the technology hasn't advanced enough to comply with the law. Smith & Wesson said in 2014 they would be pulling some guns out of the market in California rather than applying the law. Of course, they may not want to try to apply it and that it's incredibly expensive and at this point impossible. But I was laughing because I thought, this does what? You buy your ammunition from out of state if you're going to commit a murder, or you steal your ammunition, or you bypass the imprint. Incredible. So this is impossible at this point. The tech doesn't work. Well, that stopped the courts, right? No. No. The National Shooting Sports Foundation sued to block the law, which is demanding an impossibility. Question was, what would the Supreme Court do? The California Supreme Court said, oh, well, we can't invalidate the law. What? You can't invalidate a law that's impossible, even though the law says laws can't require impossibilities. Okay, so the court says that it does not suggest that people can face punishment for being unable to comply with impossible laws. It doesn't suggest. Instead, the court says, impossibility, quoting here, this California Supreme Court, impossibility can occasionally excuse noncompliance with a statute. You've been told to float. I can't. Well, yeah, I might excuse it, but I can't float in the air. Yeah. Occasionally, something being impossible means you can't comply with it. But they continue. But in such circumstances, the excusal constitutes an interpretation of the statute in accordance with the legislator's intent, not an invalidation of the law. So basically, they're saying it's okay to pass laws that try to make you do something that's impossible, but the courts can save people from punishment. So let's run this through. You possess some ammunition in the state of California that is not stamped with an imprint to allow it to be traced, since that technology does not exist. You are caught with that ammunition, since it is impossible to create the ammunition that the law demands. You are charged with creating, with having ammunition that is illegal, even though it is impossible technically to create the ammunition that would be legal. Someone in the state of California charges you with this crime. You now have this choice. You can pay the fine or take it to court and hope that if you make it to the California Supreme Court, if you have the money to make it to the California Supreme Court, the Supreme Court will say, we have deemed that in this case, the impossible nature of obtaining these bullets or these shells will free you from our grip. In other words, you have to beg mercy for doing something you are physically unable to do. Are we all clear? It's almost as bad. Well, it's probably worse than what they're trying to do here with 1639, this thing that takes away your healthcare privacy. This is the Bloomberg Hanauer thing we talked about in the first segment. That is now, there's a lawsuit that's been filed against it because it doesn't print the actual letter of the initiative. This is so bizarre. They had people sign an initiative. The law says it has to have the text of the initiative on the back, and they said, who cares? Further, you can't read the initiative without a magnifying glass. Look, I'm not kidding. You can't do it. We broke that news today. I just put this up on the text line. If you want to read the article and hear my interview with Glenn Morgan, where he talked about serving the summons and the notice of lawsuit to Kim Wyman, to Sideshow Bob, to these leftists in Seattle who were pushing this initiative. Text 1639, text that, 1639, to 800-465-8770. Brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. Text 1639. To 800-465-8770, you can read about why this law is in, or this initiative is in deep, deep trouble. Now, I said there's one more piece about this left coast madness. With Antifa having attacked people with chains. Did you see the video of the poor guy who was just, like, he was just there and he was getting attacked with really long, wicked chains whipping this guy. And it's these little tiny squirrel-like trash that would never, ever engage in a fist fight one-on-one, two-on-one, three-on-one, or four-on-one. But five-on-one with chains and IEDs, they're all tough with their bike helmets. It just makes my skin crawl. These fascists, and they are fascists. Antifa is absolutely fascist, period. That guy would have been well within his rights to shoot the person with the chain, to shoot him and kill him. In light of that, do you know what the focus is in Portland? The ACLU, you know what their focus is? The ACLU's focus is not, hey, maybe people who are, you know, holding a parade shouldn't be beaten. Hey, maybe we shouldn't allow Antifa to go beat people up because they think Republicans are Hitler, all of us. Their focus is, are the police profiling homeless people? Because it happens, and this is certainly a shock, that 52% of arrests in Portland were from homeless people or involved homeless people. Question, do you think there's some small possibility that though 52% of the arrests involve homeless people, they're only 3% of the population? Follow me on this. Do you think there's some small possibility that street people and homeless people commit more crime? Do you think there's any chance at all that that could be the explanation? Not that the police are targeting the homeless and street people. I tell you, the disease, the madness is spreading. At least there's cracks in the wall of stupid, as typified by Glenn Morgan being able to serve this lawsuit today on these gun grabbers. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. What does Maxine Waters want? What does she want? I think I know what she wants. I don't think it's a pretty picture what she wants. I think she's daring people to do something. Question is, does she really mean it? Thanks for listening to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are also on 94.5 on the Greater East Side podcast. Remember, if you want this article on the lawsuits to invalidate, stop in its tracks, the Michael Bloomberg, Nick Hanauer, Paul Allen monstrosity, And it's a good lawsuit because it's an absolute fact. The initiative does not contain the actual text of the initiative. It is deceptive. It breaks the law. Text 1639 to 800-465-8770. 1639 to 800-465-8770. Speaking of the text line, before we get to this Maxine Waters question, a couple of notes on the last few segments. This is great. 0765. California. You can't ID people, but you have to ID bullets. That is perfect. I've been getting a lot of notes from people about our friend Brandon from the Walkaway Movement. I'm going to take credit for discovering him, except the credit's not mine. It was my wife. My wife saw Brandon from the Walkaway Movement, the Unsilent Majority. Unsilent Minority. We had him on the show. He's a gay guy from New York who became, he says, a Trump-loving Republican. Hey, Todd, Tucker Carlson just had Brandon on from the Walkaway Movement. This is going to be huge in 2018 and 2020 elections. Keep it up, Todd. Continue to have him on. Changing minds one man at a time, and it's done, and the eyes are open. Truth, freedom, independent thought, Brandon P. Yeah, Brandon's doing well, the Unsilent Majority. He is, since he was on our show, he's been on some of my favorite blogs. He's been on Powerline Blog. He's been on Legal Insurrection.
So before you had him on, he was right around 400 Twitter followers.
Yeah.
He's now at 27,600 Twitter followers.
So, and we kicked that off.
Yeah.
I love it. So we've discovered a guy who appears to be a rising star, appears to be a guy who's had the red pill moment. Maxine Waters, what does she want? Now, there's the big picture. She wants to get back in control so she can continue to scam people and do bank fraud, as I see it, for her husband. She doesn't want to lose that power. But Maxine Waters has enough money. Does she need the adoration? She wants to. She hates Trump. I think she does hate Trump. I think that's genuine. But when someone says this, you're going to get played on conservative radio. You're going to get played on liberal radio. It's a soundbite people are going to play. But what does Maxine Waters want?
I know that there are those who are talking about censoring me, talking about kicking me out of Congress, talking about shooting me, talking about hanging me. All I have to say is this. If you shoot me, you better shoot straight. There's nothing like a wounded animal.
Okay, well, I think you're sort of acting like a wounded animal now, though you've not been shot, and God forbid you get shot. What's the end game with statements like this? What's the end game with her creating the dares that she's done, that she's asking for uncivil discourse, which is going to lead to violence? It already is. Antifa is inspired by this. What does she want for herself? Let me ask you this. I am truly not happy about this topic. But let me ask you this. Do you think it's possible that this woman wants to be martyred? Now, I don't know Maxine Waters. I think the president calls her low IQ, and I think that's demonstrably accurate. She's not a very smart woman. She's scheming, and she's clever, and she's nasty, and she knows how to move money around and stay hidden. I don't think that's intelligence. Maybe it's a different form of intelligence. Maybe it's a different form of intelligence not measured in IQ tests. I think that's fair. She's criminally clever. Let's say it that way. Criminally smart. Do you think it's possible that she wants to be martyred? That she sees Martin Luther King Jr., the Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King, and she says that she notices how he's observed through the country and that there's statues to him? Because Maxine Waters has to know in her heart, and this is sad, it is. She has to know in her heart that she is, it's been one big long con. And the money that she, as I recall, has funneled from her campaigns to her PACs, to her kids, to her relatives, walking around money. There's no legislation you could name that's the Waters legislation. There's never going to be a Maxine Waters building. There's never going to be Maxine Waters, office building, like there's the Longfellow office building, congressional building in Washington, D.C. And frankly, I forget the names of the others because I don't care. But do you remember that? Do you think that's accurate that she could be that craven? I can't stand the woman. I can't stand her positions. But how sad would it be if she knew something was up with her health and she thought the best way out would be to be taken out? Now, I want to be clear in complete clarity. I'm not okay at all with anybody talking assassination of people in these positions because of what it precipitates and because what it says about us when we sink down to that level, even if it's a Maxine Waters. She shouldn't be in office, but that's the voters' decision. What's the end game as well when people depart from their insistence that it is not okay at any time to critique the FBI? How many times have we been told it is not okay to critique the FBI, that the president has no business doing this, that this is tearing apart the fabric of our country to do this? That is tearing apart our institutions, that is attacking the men and women of law enforcement. How often has Trump been lectured about his critiques of the FBI and how non-presidential they are? What's the end game then when Dick Durbin says this?
Look at ICE. What a group of incompetents. At this point, they're focused more on toddlers than terrorists. They want to, instead of deporting felons, they want to deport families that are being persecuted by criminal gangs.
Now, Dick Durbin says that because, A, he observes that people no longer, well, to some degree, don't trust the FBI. And when I was on Rush's show on Friday, I once again repeated, because I got a call from a gentleman who was talking about the FBI, I reminded everybody of the FBI people in the field. Because we got that, I got that text, it was just a heartbreaker from a local FBI agent saying, hey, Todd, don't forget, we're not in D.C. We're out here busting hump to keep you guys safe. And I did apologize to him on the air. So when Dick Durbin says this, you know what he notices? Is that the president is winning with the FBI. Secondly, he notices that people are paying attention to the FBI scandal. What Dick doesn't get is that paying attention to that rhetoric, the American people simply are not with the far left on the eradication of ICE, or I should say the disappearance of ICE or the ending of ICE. They're not. The American people are not and are anywhere near the open borders perspective of the political expediency of Dick Durbin. That it works to call attention to an FBI when you can point to things like Trey Gowdy pointed to around the FBI's performance. It works because you're pointing to things like this.
He was talking about
Strzok.
Impeachment within 3 days of special counsel Mueller being appointed. 3 days. That's even quicker than MSNBC and the Democrats were talking about impeaching. Within 3 days, the lead FBI agent is talking about impeaching the president. We're a year and a half into the presidency. We're over a year into special counsel. You have a counterintelligence investigation that's become public. You have a criminal investigation that's become political. You have more bias than I have ever seen manifest in a law enforcement officer in the 20 years I used to do it for a living. And four other DOJ employees who had manifest animus towards the person they were supposed to be neutrally and detachedly investigating. There's a presumption of guilt. There's a desire by Democrat senators to fundraise off of your investigation. More than 60 Democrats have already voted to proceed with impeachment before Bob Mueller has found a single solitary damn thing.
So when the president critiques the FBI, and sometimes very savagely critiques the FBI, sometimes very virulently critiques the FBI, he can point to that. What does Dick Durbin point to? You're securing our borders and ICE, that makes you incompetent? It's not going to work. It's going to be a failed strategy. But it's so fascinating that all of a sudden on the Democrat side, it's fine. Go ahead and critique institutions. Down on Main Street. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. And to all the people listening on the podcast, you don't yet have the podcast, super easy to get. Just text the word podcast to 800-465-8770, and that's brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. Hey, on a personal note today, what a weekend. What an interesting weekend for me. What a
A range of emotions weekend. You know, I went to a graduation party of the children of my dearest friend since seventh grade. Believe it or not, since seventh grade, he and I have been more brothers than friends. His name is Matthew. And I was blessed to get to see his parents. And his parents acted as sort of a second set of parents for me. You know, dearly love my mom and my dad, who, as you know, has passed on. But it was such a blessing to be able to see these two human beings named Gary and Karen. Both of them are miraculous people. I mean, and I mean miraculous. Karen was not supposed to live. She wasn't. She was born. The thought was at the time that she wouldn't make it very long. And so her birth mother and the family decided to make her comfortable and to put her in her crib near the fireplace where it was warm. She has refused to die all these years later. Was raised by another family, or family members, but within the family, but not by her mother. She is a woman who mentored me in faith, and she did it in the most remarkably gentle way and in the most convincing of ways, that is by being of faith and by acting with entire sincerity the way her faith dictates and with complete consistency. A mother of an amazing ability to direct respect without ever raising a voice. I was gifted with the opportunity to live in their home for almost a year when I'd moved over to Seattle to play music with Matthew. And Karen is the author of a phrase that I use now with people, which is God be with you, God go with you. And she would say that to us every time we left the house, every single time we left the house. And all these years, this woman who was born on Christmas Day, she has been the mother of three boys, and I've lost track of the grandkids. I have. There's so many. They've been so blessed, and all the kids have done remarkably well. Her husband, Gary, is the reason I'm talking to you today. He's the reason I'm here. Gary was a big-time radio man. From being a legendary jock in this town, disc jockey in this town, to being an executive who was highly profiled in radio, and being a guy who, in fact, was one time was a business partner of Dick Clark, started some of the biggest radio enterprises you've ever heard of, but most of all, a father. And a father who demonstrated manliness in duty, a father who demonstrated manliness in humility, and a father who demonstrated manliness in gentility, although a very strong man, and very, very capable and very strong man, and great, great former college football player, demonstrated manliness and gentility until it was time for the lion to roar. And occasionally the lion would roar, and Gary could do that very well. I hadn't seen these two in far too long, and the last time I saw them was at church, St. James. They're both very Catholic people. And combined, they acted as backup parents after I had left my home and moved over here to Seattle. And they have taught me so much. And to see them again, do you have people like this in your life? To see them again after all these years, so many years had passed. But to be in their presence and to hug them, and to touch them, and to just remember what they did for me. These sort of mentors in our life, we don't give them enough credit, and we don't give them enough thanks. And I told Gary when I was chatting with him, I'm sorry that I was never really open to you about how much you've meant to me. And it was watching him, watching and listening to him critique radio that made me want to do this. And I'd shared with you the card I got from him after I'd hosted for Rush, I think the first time, and I'd thanked Gary for what I've learned in radio. And he sent me the most beautiful card. I have it framed and on display at my office, just to remind me of that. And to hear him express pride in me was you know, very meaningful. I'm a 51-year-old man, almost 51 years old, and it still means the world to know that you have the respect of your mentors. It was also sort of difficult because they are such accomplished parents, and they've done so well by their kids that it made me sit and examine my faults as a parent. I think I know I've done my best. I know that I have tried my hardest. I know that I have made mistakes. And we all, I think, examine our parenting this way. But the fascinating part of this is I looked at their grandkids. I looked at Violet, and I looked at August, and I looked at Ariadne and their grandkids and where they're at in life. And I'm so proud of them. I'm so happy. But I'm also so in need of prayer for my own parenting, for my own parental growth. And I think we all maybe get to that point. Maybe I'm just at a tougher point. So on one part, it's comforting to be around my mentors. On another part, it's a reminder of how much work I have to do to be the sort of parent I want to be. But it can't take away the gift of two people who didn't need to take me into their home. There was no requirement to do that, but they did. And I'm forever changed. And I'm forever grown in faith because of it. And I will be forever thankful to those two beautiful, beautiful people. This is the Todd Herman Show. We air every weekday, 3 to 6 p.m. I'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Be well, be strong, and be kind.